Welcome to PASIG Practice Pearls, where performing arts physical therapists share their expertise and discuss some of the unique needs of keeping artists healthy.
Hello and welcome. My name is Dr. Isabella Skangamore. I am a licensed physical therapist and orthopedic physical therapy resident, and I will be your host for this episode of the PASIG Practice Pearls podcast. I will be joined by Dr. Claire Plummer Such, to discuss clinical management and considerations for treating Irish step dancers. I hope you all enjoy. Dr. Claire Plummer Such is a board certified specialist in sports physical therapy, a board certified athletic trainer, and a TCRG certified Irish dance instructor. She serves as the mentoring coordinator for the Ohio State University Physical Therapy Performing Arts Fellowship, where she also teaches modules on concussion management, emergency management in performing arts, adolescent dancers, imaging, and medication management for performers. As her background is in Irish dancing, Claire also teaches an Irish dance module for the program and facilitates these clinical experiences for their fellow. Claire began dance at 3 years old in ballet, but found her passion later at age 10 in competitive Irish step dancing. She began dancing for Kathleen McGinty with the Inish Akla School, and then went on to dance with the Tim O'Hare School with Tim O'Hare and Eileen O'Kennedy Dunlap in Akron, Cleveland, Ohio. Claire was a championship-level dancer who achieved top placements in the regional championships and qualified for both national and international competitions. She has been a certified solo and Kaylee teacher since 2013 and taught informally from 2003 to 2013. She has translated her passion for Irish dance culture, tradition, and competition into the rehab world, where she continues to work clinically with Irish dancers from beginners to world champions, and is privileged to serve as a primary educator to other clinicians on this very specialized group of dancers. Well, welcome, Claire. It's a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We are excited to have you. So excited to learn so much more about Irish step dancing. All right. Ready to just dive right into the question?
Yeah, let's do it. This is one of my favorite things to talk about. So I could talk for hours. Let's do this.
All right. So what similarities and differences does Irish step dance have with other dance forms or other sports?
So Irish dancing is a type of dancing that is in line with percussive dancing. So the hard shoes are going to be similar to clogging or to tap, even though the technique is maybe obviously going to be a little bit different. Soft shoe is going to be a little more similar to ballet. It really doesn't have a lot in common with like modern or contemporary in its traditional competitive form, but with a lot of the performing and professional like touring groups, you'll see a lot of different elements in the choreography. You'll even see some hip hop in companies like Hammer Step that do different like fusion types of dance choreography. So it has the hard shoes and the soft shoes, and they have different similarities to different other types of dances.
All right. So you start talking about the footwear. Can you tell me a little bit about the different types of the footwear there?
Yeah, absolutely. So there is hard shoes and soft shoes. Beginners start out in soft shoes. And for girls, they are little black leather slippers that lace up and then you tie them around the ankle. They don't actually get tied up the calf, which some people don't necessarily know and will tie them up the calf, but they really just like slip right off the kid's feet if you do that. So you tie them around your ankle and then you tie them under your foot for the girls. And then boy beginners will start out in essentially just a black jazz shoe. And then as they move up a couple of levels, they'll actually get what's essentially a black jazz shoe with a fiberglass heel on it, so that when they're doing their soft shoe dances, they can hit their heels and do clicks and all kinds of really cool things in their choreography. So those are the soft shoes. And then hard shoes, they look a little bit kind of like a men's or boy's dress shoe, like an Oxford kind of shoe, but like with a Mary Jane strap across the ankle. Okay. And then they have a fiberglass tap on the under the toe, like where a tap tap would be.
Yeah.
And then a fiberglass heel. And the shoes are a lot, they're not very heavy. They're a lot lighter than they actually used to be. Mm-hmm. They used to actually be hobnail, which was a wood tap and a wood heel. And
oh, wow.
Like actual nails, like nailing them into the shoe. So yeah. They were very, very heavy, like a couple of pounds on your feet.
Oh, wow.
So fortunately, by the time I started dancing, everyone was using all the fiberglass. But all of the beginners start out in soft shoe. And then once they move up a level into advanced beginner, they'll start to put on their hard shoes and learn some traditional hard shoe choreography. Mm-hmm. And then from there on out, you always do both hard shoe and soft shoe.
Cool. So with the different types of shoes, it sounds like there's different types of dances. So can you tell me a little bit about what the different types of dances there are?
Yes, absolutely. So Irish dancing is competitive. And when you are competing, you compete in each different type of dance. So a beginner will start out in the soft shoes, like I said before, and girl beginners will do a reel, a slip jig, and a light jig.
Okay.
And then boy beginners will only do a reel and a light jig. Boys don't typically do a slip jig. That's just a girl's soft shoe dance, and it's very flowy and it's very graceful. Reels are very like bouncy and energetic and kind of powerful. So like if you're a very powerful dancer, that's a really good dance for you to do in competition. If you're kind of more of a graceful, flowy dancer, slip jig's going to definitely be more your thing as you move up in your levels.
Cool.
And then as you move into advanced beginner and you start doing your hard shoes, you'll start doing hornpipes and treble jigs. Mm-hmm. And the first hornpipes and treble jigs that you do are what's called a traditional speed. So the tunes are a little bit faster, and that makes the choreography a little more simple. And at that level, the kids will start to actually just learn really basic rhythms that pretty much everyone everywhere will do at some point in their advanced beginner choreography for their traditional treble jigs and hornpipes. Some kids will start to learn traditional set dances at that point in time, which are just very specific traditional choreography that's been handed down and is essentially preserved by on commission to a traditional tune. And everybody in Irish dancing knows how that goes, and they can compete in those traditional dances as well. And then as you continue to move up, so you move through a beginner and then you move through advanced beginner. And then as you move into novice, you and your teacher have the option to do either the traditional hard shoes or you can start to do non-traditional hard shoes. Okay. So that means that the tunes actually slow down a little bit and your choreography kind of picks up and you put more and more beats into the choreography in your hard shoes. And though that choreography gets more and more complicated as you move up in the levels. Not always in novice. It tends to depend on the age of the kid, but novice and above, you also typically continue to learn a lot of those traditional set dances, and you'll also potentially start to learn some of the non-traditional set dances. And again, those are just set tunes that have the traditional set dances, excuse me, have set choreography that everybody knows. And then the non-traditional ones, your teachers just kind of make up your school-specific choreography to that tune.
So I hear you talking a lot about like moving up through levels and with competition, certain expectations. Can you tell us a little bit about like what's the difference for Irish step between competition and performance? And what's the competition schedule if we do work with an Irish step dancer?
Absolutely. So the vast majority of Irish dancing is more centered on competition. That's the tradition of it. It actually started out as the teachers, the dance masters, traveling all around Ireland and competing against each other.
Oh,
well,
cool.
Teachers don't actually compete anymore.
Yeah.
Well, once you are a teacher, you're actually not allowed to compete. But the students now compete. So you will typically start out in that competitive vein in Irish dancing if you pick it up as a kid. And some kids along the way will fall off of the competition circuit and they'll just do their school's recital or just different performances at like restaurants or nursing homes or like Irish festivals and that kind of a thing. And that's perfectly fine. But the vast majority of kids like the will continue through all of the competitive levels up through championship. Okay. The kind of like enduring dream of the little kid in Irish dancing is to be a world champion. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily to be the lead in a show like it would be to be that prima ballerina.
Yeah.
But now that we've had Riverdance and Lord of the Dance for the past 30-ish years, there is that opportunity for kids to go out and perform when they're feeling like their competitive career is wrapping up. Now, that being said, you know, the dancers that go into those shows are definitely the cream of the crop. You know, those are your world medal holders that you see on stage with those shows. But it's definitely more common to hear a kid tell you they want to be a world champion than it is to hear a kid say, I want to be in Riverdance.
All right. So that's so cute, though. I love the kids and how enthusiastic they get.
They're awesome.
So what do Irish step dancers have to do to be qualified to teach Irish step? Because it sounds like there's some rules that you alluded to.
There's quite a rigorous test that teachers actually have to take in order to teach competitive Irish dancing. And I will say first, pardon me, I am certified as an Irish dance teacher under on commission. There is another Irish dancing organization, and I don't necessarily know the ins and outs of those rules for teachers, but there is a second one. On commission is generally the one that you'll run into by and large. But on commission teachers have to take a written portion and a music listening portion first. So the written portion, you have to memorize the book of 30 Kaylee dances, which are all of our group dances, and you memorize it verbatim, and then you take a written test on it. And then you take your music listening test, which you listen to just different tunes like reels and jigs and those kinds of things, and you have to say what type of tune it is and the time signature. And then they'll give you a certain number of set dances to identify by ear as well. And then you also have to write the time signature for those.
Okay.
And that's your written and your music listening, and that's one day. And then the next day, typically what you will do is the order changes sometimes, but then typically you'll do your own dancing. And that's changed a little bit. When I took it, you did your own dancing and you had to actually prepare all of your solos and prepare all of your set dances to do for your panel that's judging you. It's slightly different now, but we can go back to that. And then the third day was your teaching. So not only would you take a bunch of kids who were kind of voluntold by a local school to come show up at these exams and be really nice to these poor teacher candidates. You teach them some steps and you teach them a Kaylee in front of your panel, and your panel decides if your technique and your mannerisms with the kids are appropriate to be certified as a teacher. The dancing portion has changed recently with the grade exams becoming more popular, and that has been in order to preserve the tradition of Irish dancing. While you are competing, you have the opportunity to go through something called your grades. And essentially, you basically, it's sort of like a FESH, like a local Irish dance competition, where you go and you sit in front of this person who's essentially a judge, and they say, yes, you are adequate at this dance. So instead of a competition where you're compared to everyone else that you're dancing with, it's nope, this is adequate. You did this correctly. And you do different difficulties of steps at every level, and you have to know a certain number of set dances, and you have to know a certain number of Kaylees. So you have to pass all 12 of your grades now, and then all of those certificates are part of your teacher's application. So you're not actually dancing in your teacher's exam anymore. But the intent is to maintain the integrity of those people who are carrying on that tradition.
Yeah, that's so fantastic.
There's a lot. And I also got off really easy because I'm not an Irish citizen, so I didn't have to take the Irish language portion.
Oh,
because
boy.
There's also one of those if you are an Irish citizen.
Oh, man. Wow. That's very rigorous. Yes. Sounds like a lot harder than a lot of other programs and certifications that I've been a part of or had friends be complete. So definitely mm-hmm. very qualified teachers working with our Irish step dance kiddos.
Yes.
All right, moving more into the physical therapy aspects. So what are some of the more common injuries that you typically see with Irish step dancing?
So I will definitely see quite a bit of foot and ankle injuries. Mm-hmm. There are lots of ankle sprains. There are lots of fifth metatarsal fractures, a lot of foot and ankle tendinopathies, like Achilles tendinopathy, mm-hmm. different types of bursitis and stress fractures. What I have seen more, I think, in the past 10 years yeah. than I recall seeing as a dancer is a lot more hip and knee injuries mm-hmm. and in particular a lot more hip flexor tendinopathy and just kind of very vague, like psoas dysfunction type mm-hmm. of stuff, as well as a lot of apophysitis. I've treated a lot of iliac crest apophysitis in Irish dancers. So I'm not sure if the nature of the choreography is changing mm-hmm. or if it's just general demands or if it's other sports that these kids are playing and it's just this little pocket in my yeah. area. But I definitely see a lot more like jumper's knee and other types of hip issues in mm-hmm. this group than I assumed I would going into physical therapy.
Yeah. Yeah. And then is there any special considerations? I know there's like a specific way that the Irish step dancers tend to load that first ray. Is there any insight you have on that with the injury prevalence?
Absolutely. That's an excellent thing to bring up. Irish dancers are taught to – so in Irish dancing, you're – so I'll say it in Irish dancing terms and I'll try to say it in PT terms.
Sounds
so
good.
When you're dancing, you're – your legs are crossed. Your right mm-hmm. foot is always in front. Your feet are turned out. If your feet aren't on the ground, your toes are pointed. If you are dancing, your heels don't drop unless mm-hmm. it's part of the choreography. And then, I mean, you don't move your upper body, but we'll set that aside for now. But in PT terms, you're externally rotating as much as you can at your mm-hmm. hips. You're taking your right lower extremity and adducting it in front of your left lower extremity. Mm-hmm. And you're in essentially like sustained plantar flexion.
Yeah.
So you're dancing up on your toes the entire time and you're keeping your legs crossed at the knee.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're doing that, Irish dancers are taught to kind of wing out and load that first ray
yeah.
to make it easier to stay as high on your toes as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And what ends up happening is it has various effects through that whole first ray. So
mm-hmm.
you can get anything from FHL dysfunction to sesamoiditis to sesamoid subluxation and dislocation
mm-hmm.
or fractures. A lot of just kind of general painful stiffening in that first MTP joint, whether
yeah.
or not there's actually a bunion there. Like those joints really, really, really lock up
mm-hmm.
in a lot of experienced Irish dancers. And a lot of times you can also get stress fractures through that first ray. So instead of getting it through that second ray, like we're really accustomed to seeing in
mm-hmm.
ballet, you can actually get stress fractures through that first ray. And in particular, you want to pay attention to that navicular as well, just because it really has that poor blood supply.
Yeah.
And if they're loading and loading and loading and pounding and doing plyometrics consistently,
mm-hmm.
you want to make sure that you have a little bit of a hair trigger for any pain in that like posterior tib navicular
mm-hmm.
kind of area.
Yeah.
The other thing to think about though, going back to that stiff first MTP joint,
mm-hmm.
if it's part of the problem as a physical therapist, when you're looking at it, then it's usually appropriate to treat and help that dancer work on that mobility.
Yeah.
If it's not part of the problem, mm-hmm. it's definitely worth kind of weighing the pros and cons and thinking about whether that's adaptive and you should just leave it until it is actually a problem.
Yeah.
And maybe do a little bit of education mm-hmm. versus actually giving that dancer a little bit more mobility and potentially causing other issues. So you want to kind of treat it like a baseball player's shoulder. Yeah. You're not going to crank on the internal rotation because they might not need it or have it.
Yeah. You've read my mind. That was going to be my exact question was, what do we do if it's stiff? So thank you for reading my mind.
No, anytime.
I want to go back to what you were talking with the hip and knee injuries being really common.
Yes.
So you're saying there might be – you hypothesized some changes in the choreography demands, but what exactly are the specific demands of Irish step dancing for those of us who aren't as familiar with what this style of dancing entails?
Absolutely. So Irish dancing is essentially – really cool, really dysfunctional single leg plyometrics. It's like terrible, terrible biomechanics, single leg plyometrics constantly.
Yeah.
So what an Irish dancer needs to be able to do, we typically kind of describe it, or like you'll read it described in kind of like a ice of the body, fire of the feet type of way. So they need to, if you're starting from the top down, mm-hmm. they need to have really good posture and carriage. So they mm-hmm. need to have good core strength. They need to, and not just like abdominals, right? Your core is 360, it's front, back, all yeah. the sides. And you need to make sure that they're strong in their lats and in their triceps, and they're able to kind of de-rotate in mm-hmm. their trunk to make sure that their trunk can stay stable while their legs are doing whatever they're going to be doing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then as we move down, we can also kind of talk about like that whole derotation, like lumbopelvic dissociation mm-hmm. that they have to have as well. But they ideally would have really, really, really strong hips because they need to maintain a turnout.
Yeah.
There's no real written rule for what kind of turnout you have to have, mm-hmm. but it's very much a more is better. So if you can kind of yank them out to 90 degrees on either side, then
yeah.
that looks beautiful. You just got to keep your knees crossed at the same time.
Yeah.
So you're cranking your hips out as much as they'll give you, and then you're adducting your legs. Mm-hmm. Typically, an Irish dancer will start all of their steps with the right foot in front.
Okay.
And then they'll maintain that adducted, externally rotated position at the hips mm-hmm. the entire time they're dancing. And that's what kind of gives it like that really cool illusion. Like you're not really sure like what their legs are doing if
yeah.
you're not familiar with the dance style, but you have to maintain that the entire time. And then they also have to stay up on their toes.
Mm-hmm.
So you really don't want the heels to drop. That's a lot of points off
yeah.
in competition. And that requires quite a bit of calf strength, a lot mm-hmm. of concentric calf strength, a lot of eccentric calf strength. And while they're dancing, they're not only maintaining that, they're holding their arms at their sides, but mm-hmm. every time they pick their foot up, unless it's part of the choreography, their toes are going to be pointed.
Mm-hmm.
If they're picking their foot up in the back, it's going to kick their butt.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a big thing, like kicking your butt in
yeah.
Irish dancing. You have to be able to get that foot up
mm-hmm.
all the way up in the back. And they're doing all of that while jumping up and down
mm-hmm.
to varying degrees on one leg. So when you're rehabbing an Irish dancer, keeping in mind that those single leg plyometrics
mm-hmm.
in turnout with a straight knee, with legs crossed
yeah.
and heels up off the ground is your goal,
mm-hmm.
then you can start to break it down to those little pieces that will build you back up to that
yeah.
after you've taken care of all of those impairment level things that you're looking at with that individual
mm-hmm.
dancer.
I love that you brought up the impairment level things. For our, the next question is for when we're writing our goals, because the insurance company doesn't want to hear the goal is to be able to dance in full turnout with their legs fully crossed on their tippy toes. What are some movements in Irish step that can be generalized for other orthopedic groups?
That's a fantastic question. So when I'm working with an Irish dancer, and a lot of these dancers that you will see will be adolescents. Mm-hmm. So you do a lot of education, you do a lot of individual education, you do a lot of family education. And one thing that I start off every evaluation, or I don't start the evaluation with, but I start off the episode with every dancer is saying, look, if you can't walk without pain, then we can't get you dancing without pain.
Yes.
So I'll start them there, and then we'll work up to, okay, so now you're walking, like, well, how is getting up and down from a chair? Mm-hmm. How are steps? Because if you can't get up and down from a chair, well, that's a double leg squat.
Yeah.
So if you can't double leg squat, how am I going to get you to do double leg plyos?
Mm-hmm.
If you can't go up and down stairs, well, that's a single leg squat.
Yeah.
And if I can't get you to do a single leg squat, how are you going to do the lateral step down test? How are you going to rep out 20 perfect lateral step downs or heel taps off of the box, so I know you can potentially tolerate the impact of running if that's something that we're using in your rehab progression? Or we can progress you to different planes of single leg plyometrics, and you are actually able to accommodate that load. So that's a very similar progression that you would have for the vast majority of other athletes and other adolescent athletes as well. You would try to get them walking, and then you'd work on more of those functional activities. And then along the way, you're doing all of your education to say, look, we're doing these heel taps because you need to do stairs. We're doing these heel taps because I need to see you do 20 perfect ones before I let you do a walk run progression.
Yeah.
You know, you're working them through all of that. And it's exactly the same with an Irish dancer. You just have to build them up. And then once you get them to that point where they are able to do those plyos and they can do basic ones cleanly, then you can start to diverge and add some turnout and have them land with their knee straight, or have them land with their heel up off the ground, or fiddle around with little parts of their choreography that are giving them problems.
Yeah. So going off of that, talking about like returning, bringing the dance back on top of the rehab, what are some of your favorite interventions for your Irish step dancers?
So obviously, you're going to start with everything that that individual dancer needs.
Yeah.
But every Irish dancer, once you get to a certain level, is going to struggle with some basic things if they've been out of dance for a while. So particularly for those foot and ankle injuries, I do a lot of calf strengthening and dorsiflexor strengthening. So a couple, the two different types of calf strengthening exercises that I really like to do are eccentric heel raises and heel raises for tempo. So I'll start them in parallel, and then I will actually move them to turnout, or I'll vary it up depending on what their issue is and if they can tolerate it. But you want them to do those eccentric heel raises and be really strong in that eccentric contraction, because whenever they land on one leg, they have to have that eccentric strength so their heel doesn't drop. And that's going to be a big problem for all of those dancers who are in a boot for a long time, or in a calf, and they come out and they really won't have a calf or a cast. Sorry. and they don't really have a calf anymore after they come out of the cast. I think I finally got that right. But that's really, really important, and that's going to make them feel a lot more controlled when they get back to dancing. The heel raises for tempo are also really important, because Irish dance, well, any kind of dance at any particular level that you're progressing someone to is going to be power-based. But you really have to consider that power component in Irish dancing, where you have to produce that force for time. So having Irish dancers do heel raises for tempo, like turning on some real music and saying, I'm going to have you go for 24 bars, and you're just going to go up and down 1 and 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6, because you're going to have to do that for three whole steps, which is 68 bars. I think, no, 48 bars, my goodness. But they need that endurance. They need that control. With that calf strengthening, though, it's really important to make sure you're also balancing that out and strengthening their dorsiflexors. Mm-hmm. So doing just seated dorsiflexion, you can use a TheraBand, you can use an ankle weight, but I actually really like to have them do heel walks, mm-hmm. Especially with Irish dancers. I don't let them stick their butt out. I have mm-hmm. them pull their arms into their sides, and you really just make them go for time or for distance and get a really good burn in those dorsiflexors so that they aren't working themselves into a muscle imbalance mm-hmm. is potentially going to cause problems for them in the future.
Yeah. I love that, turning the music on. It probably helps so much with the adolescents who are like a little squirrely, to like bring their focus back into the session and back into rehab.
yes. And it's also potentially one of those things. Sorry, I interrupted you.
No, go ahead.
It's one of those things that you can potentially use as a type of almost neurocognitive retraining for this group. Like it's definitely sport specific. So you're not necessarily distracting them and making them go on autopilot, mm-hmm. but to a point that music will make them go on autopilot. Mm-hmm. So you'll be able to pick out little things that they might be controlling when you have them doing exercises or doing little pieces of choreography with like your PT bent without music. You're definitely going to get a lot of that neurocognitive retraining there, which is mm-hmm. really, really, really hard in dancers. Like this is, it drives the dancers and the researchers nuts when we talk about neurocognitive retraining. But outside of that, because a lot of the dancers that you see who do Irish dancing are adolescents, mm-hmm. almost all of them need hip strengthening. It's very, very easy and very appropriate to justify hip strengthening for pretty much anything you would see an Irish dancer for. Mm-hmm. And it's also a really good opportunity to do some education about just general strengthening and taking care of your body as well. Like, you have a foot problem, but part of your foot problem is because you have no glutes. Yes. So here's what we're going to do to mm-hmm. work on that with you. And here's what you can do in the future to take charge of that for yourself.
Yes. We love the kinetic chain. It's a beautiful thing. All right. As with the end of the episode of CARE, our last question for today's episode is, what are some key concepts for a safe and productive return to sport? I know you started talking about return to run programs. Talk a little bit about how we know, say someone is able to run, how do we know that they're okay to go back towards Irish Step?
I love this question. So the ugly gray short answer is, we don't know. You can kind of make it up. But there's a lot more than that we have in our back pockets as PTs. Mm-hmm. So the force plate research that's out there in Irish dancing, it makes Irish dancing sound a little bit worse than it is impact-wise, mm-hmm. but when you look back at the research with regarding running and other just kind of general single-leg jumping mm-hmm. plyometric sports, it's really no different. It's just the tempo and the pattern that you're doing it in, and potentially the turnout. Mm-hmm. So you're retraining them and you're rehabbing them to get back to essentially the same level of impact as running. Some dancers will tell you that they do run for conditioning. Mm-hmm. If you're actually using that as part of your rehab program, I tend to do a little bit of education about doing sprint training mm-hmm. instead of doing just like a couple mile run. Because that's probably going to be a lot more effective for you as an Irish dancer. Mm-hmm. Anything you do is going to be the equivalent of an 800 in track and field or less. So you should be sprint training if you're doing that. Mm-hmm. And if it's someone that I really just need to know that they can get used to the impact and be okay, I will have them start off with a very, very short, like walk, jog, sprint type of interval program. If we're past that, mm-hmm. or I don't think that's necessary, and even before that, I'll do some objective measures to prove to myself as well as to the dancer that they're ready for that. So I'll have them a lot of times do the lateral step down test. Mm-hmm. So I'll want to see 20 heel taps off of, I think technically it's a 20 centimeter box, but the vast majority of people use like 8 inch, which is close enough.
Yeah.
and if you can do those perfectly without valgus, without a lot of anterior translation mm-hmm. in parallel, then we can start some plyos and we can get you back into it. A lot of times you can also use Y-balance. You mm-hmm. can use any of the FMS tests or like the SFMA screens, mm-hmm. especially if you're looking at something where you're concerned with their ability to derotate or manage their lumbopelvic dissociation while they're dancing. Mm-hmm. You can get creative and use pretty much any objective measure that you want to use, as long as you know you can justify it to the dancer mm-hmm. and you can relate it back to the dancing and say, I need you to see this because this is this part of dancing. And that also makes everything a lot more justifiable to insurance companies. Mm-hmm. So you can keep showing your progress and keep treating them as well. When you are getting an Irish dancer back, you also want to make sure that if impact in particular is something you're concerned about, I would suggest putting them in tennis shoes first in class, and then putting them back into their hard shoe dances prior to putting them into soft shoe dances. Okay. So the hard shoes look a lot more intimidating, mm-hmm. but the impact that you're having is not as large when you're landing any of those jumps. Mm-hmm. You're still going to have some big jumps in hard shoes, but it's usually just like little hops into the ground mm-hmm. to make a beat. It's not these huge leaps that you're going to land on your toes on one foot.
Yeah.
So particularly for those foot and ankle injuries, having those little hops and mm-hmm. just letting them get used to being back in shoes, be accountable for their beats, is going to be a lot more helpful for them. And I mean, at higher levels, they do more hard shoes anyway. So you're getting them mentally mm-hmm. back into more of their dancing and need a lot more stamina for that as well. Mm-hmm. So they get to start a little early. And then working them back into soft shoe, and then they can kind of refine how they point their toes and how they keep their heels up when they land and land those big jumps as well.
Yeah, that's super helpful because it's a little counterintuitive to what I would have guessed before we started talking about this. So that's very helpful with the return to sport, that little nuance with the shoes. Mm-hmm. Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Any final nuggets of wisdom for us, Claire?
I would say don't be afraid of treating Irish step dancers. Always ask them what, when you're taking that evaluation, subjective, mm-hmm. always ask them, you know, do they have any competitions coming up? What level are they in? If they're like in prelim or championship, or they're getting ready for a championship, ask them what their dances are.
Yeah.
And, you know, always one of the best things I think you can ask a dancer is, what are your teacher's corrections for you?
Yeah.
Because that's going to tell you a lot about the kind of dancer they are mm-hmm. and a lot about what you are probably going to have to work on with them to get them back to where they want to be. So are they the kid who can't turn out their feet? Are they the kid who can't keep their arms in? You know, that'll give you a lot of good information to work with.
That's a great question to ask to any dancer, any athlete. What do your coaches say? What do your teachers say? Because I'm sure that will add a lot of insight into where our plan of care is going to go. All right, Claire. Well, thank you so much for joining me on this podcast. I feel like I've learned so much chatting with you about Irish step dancers, and it was so much fun to have you.
Oh, it was a blast being on here. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to PASIG Practice Pearls, created by the Performing Arts Special Interest Group of the APTA Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy.